Hi, and welcome to the Ask a Private Lender podcast presented by Mortgage Automator. I'm Lawrence. We're here with my co-host, Joseph.
Excited
today. We have James Grantis from Hosper joining us today. So it's going to be a really exciting podcast. James, thanks for stopping by today.
Thanks, gentlemen. Thanks for having me.
Now, I just kind of want to jump into it. Private lending, obviously you run a private lending company, Hosper. Mm-hmm. It's not really a job that people jump into. It's not like you go to school and you're like, I'm going to start a private lending company. Were you exposed in the mortgage business originally and that kind of got you in the door to become a private lender? Like, how did you get there?
Yeah, I actually would say I fell backwards into it. I think most people who end up in private lending or mortgages probably had an unconventional path, but I did a more conventional start after university and getting a finance economics degree. I went into the banking, I worked for TD Bank, and I was in a commercial banking role. One thing I really enjoyed about that role was dealing with my, you know, business owning clients. And I would always particularly enjoy working with clients that I thought had a very interesting business. So how I fell backwards into it, I just built a relationship with one of my clients who was a Chinese entrepreneur. She had, you know, businesses in Beijing, businesses in Toronto. And we just started talking about her business. And then, you know, our relationship built to the point where one day she kind of called me and just said, you know, like, what does TD pay you? A very direct lady. And then from there, I decided to leave TD and start working with her. And at that point, the business that we were working on was, you know, was not a MIC. It was not a licensed administrator. It was more of, you know, it was an informal business at that point. And so that was sort of the backwards fall number one that got me into the business. And then I guess, you know, spending time in the business and learning the business, I was fortunate enough to fall backwards again, meeting by chance the guys that I work with now that we together started Hosper Mortgage, first as an administrator, and since we've launched our MIC as well. And that's another story for another time, but we basically, you know, it started out as a very rigid business relationship, and then, you know, coincidentally met at a party and then hit it off, and then the business relationship built out of that personal relationship. So it was a total backwards fall, but I think it just aligned with the things I like to do, which is basically just working with lenders and working on mortgage deals.
So let me ask you a question.
Sure.
A question. So you went from TD.
Yep.
Straight to private lending. You didn't even enter the B business market. You know, a lot of people, they see the A market, they see the B market, and then organically it sort of trickles into the privates. Was it a big shock for you to see how differently things were being done from banking sector to privates?
It's the Wild West. Of course, you come on.
I wouldn't even say it was a shock because it was so new. Before meeting this individual, I didn't even know that this private market existed. And I started talking to my friends. I didn't even know what to call it, what I was doing. Like, I didn't even know what the term for what I was doing. I was like, yeah, I broker these investments on mortgages. It's like real estate related. I didn't even know how to explain it at the time. So to answer your question, Joe, or to comment on that question, the fact that I kind of was never a B broker, that's actually kind of a point of, I wouldn't say humor, but I have this conversation frequently with my partners who all maybe went through a more traditional broker upbringing, if you will, where they broker transactions first. So I guess I know you guys know me a bit better, but for anyone listening, my role is predominantly on the investor side. So I predominantly am looking at these deals as investments. So of course, over the years, I've built an understanding of, you know, how to broker a deal and what the difference is between a B deal, an A deal, and a private deal. But my focus is primarily once the deal has been brokered and done, gone through our underwriting team, which thankfully I don't lead that team. It's my partners lead that team. Then it comes to me and I'm looking at it as an investment. And that's where I think it fits my niche because, you know, I as I said, I studied finance and economics and I had my little foray into, you know, try to trade stocks and microcap stocks and penny stocks. And I think one of the most valuable things that ever happened to me was I lost money, which at my time in university was a very significant amount of money for me at the time.
In the stock market,
which was one of the biggest in the stock market. Yeah, betting, basically betting, but basically getting a stock tip from a friend who knew what he was doing. And then, you know, said, okay, buy this stock, which was great. And it went up, but there was never that instruction of when to sell. And then I just held it until basically it was worth about, you know, 20 cents on what I bought it at. And that was, to this day, I would never, wouldn't, I don't regret that at all, because it really taught me, like, investing is not just about on paper somebody's risk tolerance, but it's also an emotional thing in a sense. So that's where I learned that I really like the, like, I'm like, I'm the annoying guy in a baseball game who doesn't hit home runs, but hits singles, because statistically, you know, I get to the first base and you get more runs. And that's how I think about investing. Like, I don't really invest in home run stuff anymore, because I learned my lesson there. But I learned that, you know, if I can be very constant and see the income to kind of just trickle in, which is the type of income that is generated by mortgage investments or investments in MIC, that's more appealing to me. Then, and so that's kind of, those experiences have kind of built me into the person that likes, that enjoys doing this. But then also my experience working with TD, as I said, I was working with business owners. Most of my clients who are actually on both sides, borrowing and lending, a heavy percentage of them are self-employed business owners. So I don't regret my time at TD, because it did sort of teach me how to work with the clients I work with today.
Yeah, it makes sense. And, you know, not to veer off this topic of you know, where you are now, but one thing that I find in like the private mortgage space is people know the company names, right? They know Hosper. They maybe don't know James. Mm-hmm. I'm talking from a broker's perspective or even a borrower's perspective. You know, a little bit about yourself, like where, like I know your office is in Toronto, right? You guys are Young and St. Clair.
Yep.
Where are you from? Are you from Toronto? Like, tell me a little bit about, like, you know, parents, you know, you brothers, sisters, like, just so people know who you are, you know, if it's an investor who's listening to you and maybe they want to invest some money, like, who is James?
Yeah, yeah. I'm born and raised in Niagara, Ontario. So kind of near the border of Niagara on the Lake, St. Catharines, where I'm from. Went to school at Laurier, which is a great, great stop in Waterloo there. And I've been in Toronto last, you know, 7-8 years. Our office is in, as you said, Young and St. Clair, but actually right now we're going through that interesting time, which I bet a lot of people and companies are going through, where everyone's working remotely. So right now I'm actually speaking to you from my living room in my little tiny condo, which has never felt smaller. but we're making do, Linz and I, who we live together. And I have a younger brother too, who's actually doing an interesting thing himself. He works for a barter exchange company called BarterPay. So interesting. He works with a lot of self-employed individuals as well, business owners, and they have, it's a really cool network that they've built, which basically allows businesses to use their unused resources or their unused inventory or time to basically barter with other companies on the network. So that's a very cool thing that he's working on. So we're pretty close. That's a bit about me. That hobbies aside, and that keeping busy with work.
Very cool. And as far as like Hosper, you guys are direct to consumer. Do you guys deal with brokers? Just so people out there know how they could get deals to you.
Yeah. Thanks. Fantastic question. So actually, we're intentionally exclusively deal through brokers. So of course we get a lot of people referred to us, a lot of borrowers, referred to us, seeing if they can borrow direct. We've made a decision, basically because we have over 50 different brokerages sending us deals. We just made a conscious decision to basically make that our only channel, so that the brokers that do send us deals don't have to worry that we're gonna, you know, take their client or, you know, deal direct with that client the next year. So when we do get referrals, we basically offer a short list of our brokers that send us deals and recommend the ones that we find are good to deal with to direct referrals.
You know, I want to touch on that for a second. It's a really interesting point you made, James, because I know that in the institutional space, when a broker sends a deal to a bank, it's almost like once they've introduced that client to the bank, they'll never see that client ever again, right? The bank offers them this product and that product, and thank you, you made your beeps and you move on. It's important, and I respect you guys so much for the fact that you're looking out for the brokers. You're making sure that that broker is getting the repeat business, and whether it's renewals with you or whatever, wherever they can take them afterwards. If you were just one of the stops along the way, it's probably why you guys do get that repeat business, why brokers can trust you to know that you're not going to poach their clients.
Yeah. I'd love to like build on that point, because I think that's actually become one of the kind of critical pillars of our business. We, you know, anyone in the industry knows that there's different type of broker models. We love the broker model where that client sticks with that broker. So that means, you know, if there's a missed payment, we want the broker that's willing to also be CC'd on that email, so they're aware. We want that broker that's willing to know that if the client wants to renew, they're going to assist with the renewal. Because we really think that, I mean, we view it this way. We view it that the clients are basically the broker's relationship, and whatever we do is a reflection of the broker, not Hosper, because we know that a broker is the one that's putting the Hosper paperwork in front of them to sign. But when that broker, you know, a year later is thinking back to the loan they had or the experience they had with one of our customer service staff, they're not going to remember, you know, Hosper Mortgage. They're just going to remember the broker that they signed the deal with. So basically, we always just understand that we're an extension of the broker. So the good things we do are a positive reflection on the broker, and anything that we do, if we hope not to, that would be a negative experience, will be a negative. And so that I think has been a critically important thing to understand as a lender.
And do they like call you? Like how would a broker get in touch with you? Like, do they call like the line that they find on the computer? Like who do they call? Who should they get in touch with?
So, what do they need to
submit a deal? What do they need to provide you to submit a deal?
That's a great question, because it's actually something that's they in the industry will know has been changed really recently, the way that deals have been submitted in the private space. So we'll talk about how deals are now going through the kind of industry approved software as opposed to the email submissions, sure, which has been sure pretty standard in the past. Yep. First, I'll like to take the opportunity to actually mention that. So Adriano Moriello and Jerry, these are two of our BDMs, basically. So they basically have relationships with you know, pretty much almost all, if not all, brokers at this point. And if they don't have a relationship with you, I would love to have you reach out to us and get one of our BDMs to, you know, introduce Hosper formally to you and figure out how we can fit your need as a broker to fill that gap. So traditionally. We kind of pride ourselves on speed of response. So I know a lot of times lenders may just say, you know, call our BDMs. We honestly think that if you just submit the deal and you've provided the minimum materials that you need, which is just a submission through Phylogics, is how we're receiving, you know, all of our deals at this point, we can get a quote to you within 24 hours, usually quicker, like usually within a few hours. And then, but if there's a complicated deal or you're waiting on a few documents, you have a deal that's half bit, you want to just get a sense of, then that's when I would encourage a broker to contact one of our BDMs, the one that they have a relationship with. And then from there, you know, from there, we'll just follow the formal process, because I mean, the formal process works. So there's no right point to reinvent the wheel. And that's something that Mortgage Automator has been tremendously helpful with in getting that process streamlined. Because we were of the old school, which is sort of a new school, which was just getting all the documents submitted over email. The first 3-4 years of doing this business, you know, we just would explain to brokers what attachments they needed to attach. But as you guys have may or may not already communicated with all of your listeners, you know, that's been changing. And now that all deals have to be submitted formally through Phylogics and make sure that we are properly credentialed as an Equifax recipient, all the deals are coming in smoothly, because they're all immediately onboarded to that Mortgage Automator platform that we're familiar with using.
I appreciate that. And, you know, you didn't have to bring up Mortgage Automator, but I appreciate it. So, yeah, James has been on for a while, and I think you're a pretty big advocate of it. And, you know, we're always trying to improve any lender's processes. So if you have any ideas, you know, as always, we're happy to change some stuff around on our system to make it work. You know, moving along from that, private mortgages, you know, I've heard there's a potential for fraud, but like that's with every business essentially. Like, have you guys ever been hit where, you know, something just didn't smell right, maybe didn't go through with the loan, or maybe you did and there was an issue that ended up being rectified? Any funny business you've ever dealt with?
Yeah. We've fortunately, fortunately, I hope this trend continues. We've never incurred a loss and never had to make a title insurance claim, but we have had to pull a few plugs on deals. And I mean, when you pull a plug, you can never say 100% that was fraud,
right?
because you know, there's never been that like accusation, but we've certainly backed out of deals. Things that, you know, when you do so many of the same thing, like I think one thing that we've tried to do with our business as a lender is just make every deal follow a consistent process. Of course, every deal is different and every deal is
sure
has a different circumstance, but when you keep that consistent process, it makes the oddities really jump out at you more.
I know it's never an easy conversation to have with someone who's referring business to you, right? You've got a guy that's sending you deals and you've now got to pull out of a deal, not intentionally. How is that conversation with that broker?
It's not his fault. You know what? Like, and I get it. If you're lending someone money, you got to feel comfortable the whole way. And it's not worth taking that, even if it's a 1% risk where you just have that bad feeling in your stomach and you got that
right pit
saying like something's not right. And I know what you're saying, like went forward and said to the broker, like, sorry, I can't help you on this one. When
it's a breakup call. It's a breakup call. Like, and this guy's expecting a paycheck. And in turn, James is calling the guy saying, I know we spent a bunch of time, money, lawyers have done work. I'm pulling out, dude. I'm really sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, that's,
I mean, a breakup call is a good term for it, but I don't know if that's exactly the case because we still want to have the relationships with these brokers. The breakup call is when you find out that a broker is doing things non-compliantly and a broker is asking you to pay them under the table, pay them in cash. Don't tell my principal broker this. That's when it's time for a breakup call and say, listen, we're not going to work with you. This relationship is over. It's not you, it's me, but actually it's you. The conversation earlier about the deal, I know most of the brokers we deal with are big boys and big girls, and you know, they don't want the stain on their reputation the same way that we don't want the headache of a deal. So usually we just level with them. Usually we don't try to like dance around it and kind of find loopholes to get out, because I think that just hurts a reputation more than acting like a prudent lender and just basically saying, this is the issue. This is the concerns that title insurance has. This is the things that that the lawyer was unable to collect, which seemed like a very reasonable request. Like kind of like, what would you do if you were in our situation? Or do you have any suggestions to solve this? And you kind of put that back on them. How would you like to solve it? And then it makes it a shared responsibility. Well, it kind of changes the narrative a bit.
Well, I do want to make a comment about it, right? Because there's always going to be a give and take where you rely on the broker to send you that business, right? You've built that relationship with them. How much onus is on them to do proper due diligence on these consumers so that you don't have to cancel the deal? Like if they ask certain questions ahead of time, would this issue have been completely averted if they just maybe did a bit more homework? Or is the attitude today, I'm just going to send to my private. He's a private for a reason. They understand the risk that comes with these deals. I'm not going to ask as many questions. Do you think, given where the market's going, given the type of clients that are now coming for privates, do you think there should be more of an onus on brokers to ask more questions, given that it's not the industry it used to be 10 years ago?
I don't know if this is necessarily a correct opinion, but actually my opinion is, trying to think about how to frame this. I actually don't necessarily think, let's put it this way. I would never say to a broker, it's your fault you didn't do more underwriting. Because back to the conversation about, you know, the clients being the broker's clients, we really view it like, in a sense, a food chain. Without the broker incurring all the marketing costs and doing all the work that they do to get the deals, there's nothing for us to lend on.
Absolutely.
So certainly the brokers that do that due diligence, that vet the deals, that ask the thoughtful questions, they're the ones that are killing it. They're the ones that always have files on the go, and they're the ones that we do the most business with. So, but I would never use the term like lazy broker or like this deal fell apart because the broker did X. Because at the end of the day, just like we have our own, you know, business model and our own preferences as a lender and our own way of doing things, so do brokers. So certainly if brokers can, you know, every brokerage builds their own business in a way. I mean, asking those questions and doing the proper due diligence is only gonna make lenders like them more, but it's gonna save them time from spending time and money on deals that end up getting canceled. Did I miss the mark on your question?
No. I think you hit it right on.
Yeah. And I could have the wrong perspective as well. I've been thinking about this a lot, and you know, people in the lending business, I mean, they're managing investors' money. You know, sometimes it's an investor that's giving you the last 100,000. Sometimes an investor has 10, 20 million. And obviously they're relying on your company or even you to let them know, like, this is a good investment, this is not a good investment. I would hope that people in your shoes, you know, they understand money. And I would imagine you do, because it's very hard to have a successful lending business when you don't understand what money can do and what money is and how you make it work. You know, growing up, was financial literacy like taught to you from your parents? Was it something that you kind of just learned as you went? How did you figure everything out?
My parents do kind of joke now that I do run a lending company, that I learned how to count because in Monopoly I would always want to be the banker. That was like, that's like the haha mom dad joke, like,
yeah,
you know. But I don't know, it kind of clicked a bit for me in terms of I was always very frugal, you know. As a kid I was always like, yeah, I saved because, you know, that's just kind of what I was ingrained in me. In terms of financial literacy, we didn't pre-discuss this, Lori, but that is a really actually important topic or kind of mission of mine. I actually do have a strong passion for financial literacy. I've worked with high school students, I've worked with elementary school students, I've done like formal programs with Junior Achievement and Money Matters programs going into the schools, and I've also done some informal ones with like a program called Hosper Helps that we're working to get started. So I think that, you know, I think that money management or money mismanagement is like a critically undereducated topic.
For sure.
And then you can see that on both sides. I mean, you can see that on the side of lenders that don't really understand what they're doing. And you can see that on the side of borrowers that get themselves into situations where they just need help because they've got themselves buried.
Right.
And so financial literacy, I would say, is like something that has been like always kind of a bit of a passion, which kind of is probably why it goes hand in hand with why I like doing what I do on a day-to-day business.
Yeah, it makes sense. And yeah, I completely agree with you. Like, although I saw recently that they're introducing some new courses in schools to help people understand financial literacy. So I think it's important, definitely in the past. I mean, nothing was taught in school with regards to any of that stuff.
No.
And I think that is interesting because once you go to university, and then the credit card companies, they're putting the booths outside, like apply for a credit card. And it's people who literally have learned nothing about any of this, and they're already starting off on the wrong foot by getting that credit card spending and not understanding that you have to pay that credit card off every month. So yeah, definitely interesting. And the organization that you're putting together is called Hosper Helps, was it?
Oh, Hosper Helps. This is just an idea of, hey, we have many affluent clients who probably have information to share, also who have, you know, kids and that are ready to become adults of their own. So there, sure, there could be an option there. And then also we have a portfolio of borrowing clients that maybe have gone through a life event or, you know, could use some advice along with the loan to start the path to recovery or to growth or whatever it is, right? Everyone's situation is different.
For sure. Yeah. And it actually leads me into my next question with what you just brought up. And, you know, over the years as a money manager, as a, you know, running a private mortgage fund, I'm sure you have a lot of people that you deal with that are, you know, financially savvy, you know, they're very wealthy. Is there any money related advice that any of them have given you along the way that you could share? And if there's nothing that you can come off the top of your head, I know that these questions are just kind of, you know, being thrown at you, but, you know, I always find like, you know, if you hang around people that have a lot of money, you're going to learn something about how they collected and gathered that money and kept it, you know, or they'll give you advice. Is there any little pieces that you've picked up along the way?
Sure. This is off the top, but I think there's a couple good ones come to me. People who have made a lot of money and have had successful businesses or careers realize that it doesn't do you a lot of good to hum and haw and on a decision for 3 days only to make a yes decision in the end. So certainly there's times when you should sleep on a decision, but I'm impressed with the really wealthy and successful individuals that I work with that they're confident enough once all the pieces are in place to be able to make those quick decisions and then move on with their life. And that's how they're able to run so many businesses or do so many things, because they can be decisive. So the decisiveness, I would say, is one of the things for my clients that I'm constantly impressed by, and I'm trying to kind of internalize that. So when I'm faced with a decision, I just want to make a decision and be content with it, so that it doesn't have that mental baggage.
They're not scared. They're not scared to make those decisions. They're comfortable saying, you know what, this is my decision right now. We're going to go through that. I'm not going to waste any more time on it. I'm going to jump to the next thing that's important.
You know, to further touch on that point, Lawrence, I think it just further emphasizes that the people James is dealing with, these accredited investors, they've done this before. They know what's going on. They're comfortable in that space, and they're able to make those decisions. It's the people that sometimes, some of the smaller investors that are just dipping their toes, that are trying to get into that space, they're the ones that are most nervous. And it's funny, some of the people we talk to, they say to people, if this is your last $50,000, you probably shouldn't just do something like this, because if you're going to be very nervous and uncomfortable the whole time you're doing it, it's something probably that it's going to be difficult for you to deal with as well, right? Because they're always like, is everything okay? Should I be worried if a payment bounces? You know, that's sort of, it's sort of nice to say, I pick up the phone, I call a guy, and the guy says, I'm good to go with $500,000, and boom, you're done. The deal's done. And you know, they're big boys. Yeah.
I totally agree with you. At the end of the day, what we are really like for our clients is just a trust. We're selling trust, and we're providing trust that they know that as smart and savvy as they are, that you can't be an expert in everything. You know, and we have a team of X amount of people working on this one loan. Like, can they really doing this all day, every day? Are they really going to be able to navigate a loan better than us? So really it comes down to trust, the trust relationship. So I totally agree with you there. And then, and that's would sort of be another thing that I've realized that I've tried to kind of ingrain in myself, is that align yourself with experts. So the way that I fit a niche for many of my clients, like I'm not their holistic investment advisor, but I'm probably their go-to guy as far as mortgage investments, and by extension, maybe mortgage advice. But likewise for myself, like don't try to be an expert in everything. Just have an expert in everything. And another one that I would be remiss not to mention that always gets me too, is that, the people that come to a meeting or present wealth are generally not the ones that have significant wealth. I find it's the individuals that I deal with that are understated, that are very easygoing, that are, you know, that don't try to portray anything, that are my individuals that have the largest portfolio with us.
Yeah.
You know, and that will stick with me without naming any names. Like, you know, I've spoke to people on the phone that will make me feel very small, you know, and make me feel like they're big shot and I did something wrong. And then I'll speak with people with, you know, many, many, many zeros that will talk to me like a peer. And so maybe that's something else that I would try to take on, is like, if I, you know, that, you like dealing with those people and try to, you know, treat everyone like that, because, you know, how much better is it, whether you're in a mortgage business or any business, you know, when you have to dread calling somebody versus you're like, okay, this is a problem with this guy, I'll pick up the phone and call him or her. And it's a conversation, not a problem you're trying to tackle, which is never a feeling you want during your workday.
Okay. So yeah, James, I'm going to put you on the spot here. You made a comment that's interesting to me. Have you ever told an investor you don't want to work with them? Because you guys didn't see eye to eye. And why?
I'm trying to think of a scenario that I can explain without getting into too many details. But there's certainly been, basically, I've tried to, as I've sort of tried to kind of grow in my role, and our company has grown, I've started to realize, like, the incremental business or benefit of having these other people in your network, let's take it like a lender, for example, is not worth the stress in your day. So like put in a couple perspectives, all deals will get funded. So if, do I really want to give the deal to someone who's going to be like breaking my balls and like making me feel uncomfortable and, yep. and like, you know, making a mountain out of a molehill. Like I just don't want to deal with those people. So it's not, Joe, it's not to your point where I'm like, call them and break up with them. And I'm generally try never to burn any bridges, but I certainly will stop sending deals. And then certainly when they reach out to say, hey, send me deals, that's when I like to subtly present the issue to give them some time to think about it. I don't just say like, yeah, I'll send you deals. And then also don't send them deals, because I think that doesn't do any good. But usually if I stop sending deals, then 6 months later, as we all do, we get the email or the call that says, hey, I haven't heard from you in a while. That's yep. when I like to say like, thanks for reaching out. I appreciate it. But reason I haven't been able to find any deals for you is because, like, if you remember on our last deal, this was an issue and that was an issue, and we didn't exactly see eye to eye on that. I appreciate I'm being very vague, just because I just want to be careful.
Yeah, not please.
No, definitely.
But, yeah,
totally.
But if I'm conveying, hopefully I'm conveying that, like, that's when I like to like lay it out, like lay the cards on the table and be like, this is why, and these are the things that I can't budge on. So if you want to tell me that you're willing to try without those issues, like you're willing to, you know, see past that, then we can try again. But also to that point, as I'm saying that, I don't think I've ever gone back to someone and then they ended up being the same way. So usually, like,
of course,
maybe give someone a second chance, but generally never a third.
And yeah, I have it's ingrained in them. They can't help themselves. They have to be the way they are, and that's okay. They'll find
might not be a good fit for you guys. That's it.
Exactly.
I'm going to give you an example. And this is not like story of when you got to break up with a girlfriend or boyfriend, but a story of when you go back to the girl or guy that you said you would never go back to. That's what it feels like.
Yeah.
When you get that lender that's jerking you around and they always made your life hell, but they have, like, you know, boatloads of cash. So then when they dangle that in front of you saying, you know, I'm ready to do more deals, got a couple million sitting in my account.
Yeah.
And I used to, this is what I'm trying to get better at, because I'm sure I'll still make these mistakes, but then I would go back. And then I would say, and then my lawyer would say to me, you said that we're never going back to that guy. And then I would have to make excuses. And it's like your friend that's consoling you saying, like, why are you going back to them?
Instant, you know, buyer's remorse. Instant.
Yeah. So there's a lot of the parallels with dating and mortgage lending. Who would have thought?
That's very funny.
That's so funny.
We do a segment called Would You Rather, and it's for Hosper.
Sure.
The kinds of deals that you would prefer. And you could say both at the end of it. You could be like, I'd prefer this, but we'll take both. So we're not trying to, you know, limit, you know, the kinds of deals that you want. It's more of a, if brokers are listening, these are the kinds of deals that Hosper would prefer to write.
Okay, sure.
Do you guys like deals that are extremely low loan to value with no income and terrible credit? Or would you rather a higher loan to value deal where the borrower has great income and great credit?
The former. We would generally are an equity lender. So
yep.
we're really looking at equity first and second and third. Let's call it credit income fourth and fifth, just to help put context to the deal. But certainly when faced with that decision, I would have picked the first one. Hosper is an equity lender.
30% loan to value, like everything looks terrible, credit horrible, but you guys are still good because you guys are just focusing on, am I comfortable with the amount of equity in that property? And if you are, you're good to proceed. Essentially is what you're saying. Okay. Yeah. Got it.
I can elaborate for sure, but I'm quite confident to just say,
gotcha.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No. And you know, we'll get to a point where you can kind of tell everyone what you're really looking for and the kinds of deals that you like and all that sort of stuff. This is more just a little fun segment here.
No, let's do it.
Would Hosper prefer to write one loan for $1 million or 10 $100,000 loans? Or does it not matter?
So I'll try to take from my investors and continue to be decisive on that one. I will also pick the 10 loans for 100,000. That's probably more of our niche.
Yep.
So again, I'll try not to say both. I'll pick one and I'll pick that one of the 10 loans for 100,000. I think we're good at closing deals quickly. So this the scale of doing 10 loans, that's easy for us. Yeah.
Well, you heard it here first, folks. James is not afraid of hard work. He doesn't mind doing the 10 deals instead of the one doesn't mind the 10 million.
Exactly. So,
well, honestly, if the heavy lifting was done long ago, that built the process that can facilitate 10 deals without too much backbreaking. Right. I think that's the key. I think that was the key.
Got it. Okay. And you know, we haven't gone into your loan to values or anything, but would you rather like a first mortgage at 50% loan to value with a lower interest rate, say like, you know, 699, or would you go to like, would you prefer like the higher end, maybe like 70% loan to value with that higher rate of return?
No, I'll again try to be decisive because I'm sure every lender would probably look at both of those deals, but I'll say Hosper's niche. I'll be decisive and say the 70% loan to value deal. We'll quote that, you know, probably all day long. You know, 8%, 8.49%. That's probably a deal that Hosper is doing all the time.
So you'd prefer to go to the higher loan to value that you still feel comfortable with to get that higher return for your investors, as opposed to taking like a really safe 25% loan to value deal, but you got to cut back on your rate a lot.
Preference, I think, is I'm just going off of what we do a lot of. So we do a lot of those 70% deals. All over Ontario that are going to probably be quoted at like, you know, 849, 799. We're doing a lot more of those than the deal that, you know, 699, 599. We very rarely, or 699 is our lowest pricing. We only do a handful of those deals a month.
Sure. And like, as you know, like we're like Automator, we're integrated with like Phylogix, like Lendesk. And, you know, the point of these podcasts is just to get the message across and let people know about Hosper. So, you know, if there are brokers listening to this and maybe it's the first time they've ever heard of Hosper, what kind of deals are you looking for? What should they be sending to you guys?
We'll take a look at any residential deal across Ontario. We're basically looking for a deal where they've, you know, they're looking for a 1 year solution with a lender that's going to keep them in the loop for that 1 year. So we really think of our deals as like runways for a longer term plan with that client. So many of the brokers that are submitting deals to us probably have a, you know, 1 year, then 3 year, then 5 year plan with that client, or at least the strongest brokers that we work with have that. And we want to be that sort of the start of that plan. Okay. So that could mean it's a second mortgage. That could mean they're looking for a second. Well, there's a few years left on the client's fixed first mortgage. It could mean that it's a client's first mortgage. That could mean because that they bought a pre-build and they now need to close. And the banking environment is the institutional mortgage lending environment is different than they assumed it would be when they bought the pre-construction.
Sure.
Or it could be a home that they've lived in for many years and they're just looking to regroup and take a 1 year private to consolidate some debts and then work forward back to a bank. Or as I said earlier, it could be a second because they're already happy with the bank mortgage they have. So honestly, just right now our niche, we do a lot like many lenders, but our niche is certainly first and second residential mortgages. High loan to value, low loan to value, doesn't matter. If you send it, we'll give you a quote we'll give you a response the same day. So you'll have an answer without wasting too much time.
Very
good.
Got it.
Okay. That sounds good. And that kind of brings us to the end of what we're doing here. And I don't know about you. I'm a pizza guy. I love pizza. I'm probably sure. probably a three a week for me. You're from Niagara, you said earlier.
Yeah.
Been to Niagara, not so often, but you know, every once in a while. Where are we supposed to go there for pizza? What's the place? What's the spot in Niagara?
Hands down, there's a spot in St. Catharines, Lake and Lakeshore, called Bugsy's. Okay, Bugsy's is my last meal ever. Really? Whenever anyone asks, I would go to Bugsy's. Best wings, great pizza, 100 different beers. If you drink all 100 beers, you get your name on the wall. Okay. This is like the best pub bar that it's the pub of my dreams. That's where we would go.
All right, Bugsy's in St. Catharines.
I think we should ask him another question though, because part of it's the food, which I agree with Lori. Always good to know what's going on there. But I know you're a golfer.
Yes, sir.
And I know you've been playing around quite a bit. You said you were, when you started in the university, when you were younger. Bucket list, one course you haven't played and you're dying to play. Where is
like,
it?
Well,
you have what? It's your last day on earth and you could play one course. Where are you playing?
I would play Augusta National. That's like one. It's
a no brainer.
I mean, that feels like a cheat answer, but I mean, it's a golf course and people play it. That's where I would pick.
I should have said Augusta's not allowed because
you gotta let it happen.
Okay, fine. Top three.
That's an auto answer, Augusta.
I know. I should have.
Okay,
that is an auto answer.
That is an auto answer. Like with all the ones that would come to mind would be auto answers, like Pebble Beach. That's an auto answer, but that
St. Andrews.
The reason that these ones come to mind, St. Andrews, I didn't even think of first, but that also is an auto answer because the reason that makes it a dream course is because you've seen it on TV so many times. The closest thing I've had to that is playing Glen Abbey. Think of what you will about the course, but playing it after having walked it, watching the pros play it.
Right.
So I never played Glen Abbey until after I watched the Canadian Open there. And that was a semi-surreal experience because I just remember, seeing the guys and where they hit to and then my ball go halfway. And then, that was a cool experience. And I think that's what the dream course is. You've pictured it so many times and you've seen it on TV and then you get to be there. I think that's one of the cool things about golf.
Awesome.
Very cool. So just to do a little recap, James Grantis, Hosper Mortgage, they're looking for residential deals. They could be first, they could be seconds, low loan to value, high loan to value. Send them the deals. Someone's going to get back to you right away. The names were Adriano and...
And Jerry. Adriano and Jerry.
And Jerry.
We'll make their contact information publicly available.
Very cool.
Yeah.
And we're
looking for golfers, squash players, and chess on a personal level. I'll do those three things as well.
Very good. And I'm sure you guys could tell, James is a great guy. I've met the other guys he's talking about. The whole team they're a good group of guys. So, if you're new to the private mortgage game, don't be nervous to reach out. They're there to, help you every step of the way, hold your hand. They just want to write good deals. So, If you're a broker, you're listening to this, send them over your deals. You won't regret it. Thanks for, obviously listening to the podcast. James, thanks for sitting with us.
We appreciate your time, buddy.
Take care, guys.